Hello, this is episode 313, and in it, you're going to meet Claire. Now, in September 2023, Claire finished building a new home. Working closely with her team, including a building designer and builder, and with Home Method as her support and guide, she's created a fantastic sustainable home for herself and her family on the beautiful Florio coast of South Australia. Now, in this episode and the next, Claire shares some amazing gems of know-how and insights into what has really made the difference in her project. She talks through finding and choosing her team, getting her design right, and the selections and decisions that she prioritized to stay on track to her vision and goals. It's a fantastic and super informative conversation for anyone who is wanting to build or renovate their home in a sustainable way and also in alignment with their personal values and priorities. Now, remember, if you'd like to grab a full transcript of this episode, plus information on the resources that we discuss, and I've also got photographs of Claire's finished home, you can find all of that by heading to www.undercoverarchitect.com/313. That's the numbers 313. Now let's dive in. I begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of country throughout Australia, and I recognise the continuing connection to lands, waters, skies and communities. I pay my respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders both past and present. If we haven't met before, I'm Amelia Lee, the architect behind Undercover Architect. Based in northern New South Wales, Australia, I'm a wife, mum and architect, and I've been working in the architectural industry since 1993. I founded Undercover Architect in mid-2014, and since then it has operated online to help and teach homeowners like you how to get it right when designing, building or renovating your home. Undercover Architect supports hundreds of thousands of homeowners across the world through their project journeys via this podcast, the website and our online courses and programs, including my flagship online program, Home Method. Consider Undercover Architect your secret ally. Whoever you're working with and whatever your dreams, your location or your budget, it's here to support and guide you on this ambitious journey of yours. Grab access to my free online workshop, Your Project Plan, and learn super helpful information to save time, money and stress in your reno or new build. You can find it at www.undercoverarchitect.com/projectplan. That's projectplan. Now, let's get into the episode. Building a new home can feel like a really big undertaking for the uninitiated because you're literally turning vision, thoughts, ideas, wishes, and wants into physical reality. Things that feel dreamlike become a real home that then supports real everyday life. And so getting that right can also feel like a really big undertaking, working out what's going to be important, what will really matter. It can feel like you're wading through all of the things that you wish and want for your future home and your future life. Now, you'll hear in this episode Claire talking about spending time on her design brief, which is one of our early steps inside Home Method, and it's supported by my brief builder template. How that design brief acted as a guide and a clarifier through her project, Claire talks about that, and also how now looking back at it 3 years later, the finished home is a true reflection of those initial desires and ambitions. I do hope that you find this conversation super helpful. We talk about so many different things here, and I was sitting there the whole time thinking, you're a star student, Claire, as I heard over and over how Claire has applied the learnings, the tools, and the resources in Home Method to achieve such a great outcome in her project. Here's part one of my conversation with Claire. Well, Claire, I am so excited to have you here because this is the first time we've kind of met on Zoom, but you have been in Undercover Architect's world as an online course member since, I was looking back, you joined How to Get It Right, which is kind of the initial iteration of Home Method back in 2020, so August 2020. And so we have been in each other's orbits for a very long time. And you've been beautiful at how you've shared your project journey with the Home Method community in the Facebook group. And I've watched how intentionally you've created the outcome that you've achieved and now celebrating that you've moved into this home and you're living in it and what that's doing for your lifestyle. And so to actually be having this conversation with you, I'm so chuffed and so grateful that you're able to come on and share your journey because I know it's going to be super helpful for those listening to learn more about how you approached your new build project to create the home that you did. And I know it was done in alignment with some very significant values and priorities for you. And you were very very deliberate and intentional about what you were doing. So, and then of course, juggling that with all of the regular demands that everybody is in terms of budget and, you know, demands on your time and your life and what the site needed and all of that kind of stuff. So I was wondering if we could just kick off by understanding, who did you build this new home for? Who lives in this home?
Sure. I'm really, really pleased to be here. Thank you, Amelia, for having me. So who lives here? Myself and my two children. My kids are 10 and 6. I just had to remind myself of their ages, 10 and 6, and a puppy as well. And we live on the beautiful Fleurieu coast on Ganayota, just outside of Normanville in South Australia.
And when you embarked on this ambitious adventure at the beginning, what was your kind of plans or view for what you wanted to create? How did you go about thinking about, you know, the home and what your sort of dreams were for it in terms of how you wanted it to be?
Yeah, I think, you know, building a sustainable home has always been something I've been quite interested in. I was reflecting, I think it was probably over 20 or more years ago, I did a year 9 science project on building an off-grid house, you know, complete with compostable toilets and all of that kind of thing. So I think, you know, that's always been in my mind, and having this desire to do something that was kind of climate responsive and intentional. And yeah, I guess it kind of reflected the environment that we live in. And So I've lived in Canberra for 20 years, and Lighthouse Architecture and Science, who I know that you have a strong connection with and have been on the podcast before. You know, the work of Lighthouse is really quite influential in Canberra, and, you know, coveting a lighthouse house is something that a lot of people do. And I was lucky enough to visit Jenny Edwards' home for a previous Sustainable House Day. And that was really, again, that was really influential for me, thinking about how this can be done with a lot of intention. I really like their aesthetic as well, and just how they're able to combine that kind of that aesthetic with this functionality and the sustainable values as well. So moved back to South Australia at the end of 2019, and a few changes to family along the way, but had the opportunity to purchase a block here and start on that dream of building a house in 2021.
Fantastic. And so in terms of, can you remember back, so you've bought this, you know, block of land, it's in a beautiful location, you've got the beach nearby, you know, really like really tapping into a quality of life and lifestyle that's possible when you're kind of living in that type of environment. Do you remember what you were nervous about? Or, you know, obviously if you were starting in 2021 and you bought that block of land in 2019, there's a bit of time between those two things. Can you think back to what you were most concerned about kind of getting right, or what you were worried might go wrong, or, you know, how that journey was going to look for you, and what led you to thinking about, okay, I actually need to invest in my learning here. I need to get some structure to this, you know, how's this going to work for me?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. I think I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I think that one of my greatest fears is that, you know, like the dream that I have might not, the reality might not live up to the dream that I have. And while something exists as a fantasy and on a piece of paper, it can be as perfect as you like. And so there's a little bit about kind of knowing myself that actually this is going to be uncomfortable, because it may not live up to these perfect expectations that I have of myself and others and what I can create. So that was probably one thing. The other was doing this by myself as a woman, you know, in the kind of construction environment. I felt that, you know, there was a potential for me to, you know, feel a little bit uncertain about what I could contribute and, you know, how the relationships should work. So having some support and some, you know, evidence and some information that helped me to go into conversations with more information and, you know, to ask the right questions was really, really important. I think another thing, this maybe is quite minor, I have a brain that really struggles to visualize things in three dimensions. So, you know, learning from others, and I know that I wanted to build a custom house, so I couldn't go to a project home designer and say, you know, I want that one and get the feel. So I really needed like all of the really practical information about, you know, how room layouts work and sizes and, you know, all of the information about materials in order to be able to visualize what I wanted to construct. And, you know, I'm just a bit of a nerd as well, so I really like to be up to date on new information new science, the building industry is just, there's so many changes.
And so you worked with a building designer, and can you explain a bit about sort of what the journey was of looking for the right team and how you went about that? You know, we joke in Home Method that sometimes you have to kiss a few frogs before you find the right fit in terms of who you're going to work with. I think too, you know, you shared with me your brief. It's beautiful in terms of the level of intention, description about how you wanted to live, what your values and priorities are. It's not prescriptive, in so far as we want, you know, we want these kinds of spaces and we want these functions, but it's not, we need this and this connected in this way. You've obviously not done, you know, some people do draw a floor plan. You've not done that. You've literally done this written document, and you've got then links to, you know, ideas boards and those kinds of things. So did you do that first and then start interviewing designers, and how did you kind of have that conversation and then find the right fit in terms of putting your team together?
So I had initially embarked on a building project on the site, and then that reached a conclusion with some changes to the family situation. So I'd learned a lot through that process, and I think that that's something that I think, you know, if I was advising other people about their journey, like the false starts do add up. Like you learn so much from them; they're not wasted time. But when the time came to restart this building project, I really wanted to work with a Fleurieu. I live on the Fleurieu Peninsula in South Australia. I really wanted to work with a local designer and builder. Like this place is so special to me, and I really wanted to work with local professionals who also really loved this place. So I actually met Lockie McEwen from Harmonic Home Design, who I know that you've referenced on the podcast before in your opening episodes with Mel Lupus. She, sorry, he, I think he was, there was a kind of like a come and meet a designer day that maybe Renew or someone was putting on. And I just jumped on a Zoom call with Lockie and had a chat to him. And I think we kind of really aligned in terms of the like values that we had, and of course, you know, I liked some of the work that he'd done as well, aesthetically. So that was a good fit. And then one of the things that I did do, which I definitely wouldn't have done but for the Home Method, was to engage a builder early in the process. I think if I was following the, you know, the standard, you know, get a design and plans done, go to tender, go to the builder, that probably would have been the standard process that I would have followed, but was really inspired to pull in that building expertise early. And, you know, was down at the coffee shop at beautiful Port Elliot and saw one of the trucks for 35 South. I thought, oh, these guys look interesting. Looked them up online. And again, it was really about that values alignment. Had a chat to them, and I could really see that they weren't just a company that was about, you know, it weren't just a construction company. They really had values around doing really, really good work. There was almost a like artistic quality to the way that they showed up and approached their work. So the three of us worked really closely together through the design phase, and I think that was so excellent to do. I said to both Lockie and Sam Fotoulis from 35 South early in the process that I wanted to build a house that we were all really proud of. And so I think that that's something that we were able to do. And we would jump on Zoom meetings together and problem solve together. And having that building input early, I think it's probably important all the time, but over the last 3 years, with just the changes to the economic environment around building, it was really essential to have Sam's input throughout the process so that we could build a house that, you know, aligned with my financial expectations.
Yeah, I love that. And I remember you saying when you were in the midst of that, it was actually a lot of fun watching a couple of colleagues kind of have these conversations with you there, knowing that it was about your home and your project, but seeing their expertise kind of come out in terms of how they were each bringing what they individually do to the table in terms of it, and just, you know, being witness to that you actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm a huge lover of learning, and I think that we could all say that we learned a lot through the process from each other as well. And I think that, you know, when you're talking to a builder or a designer or an architect, I think that that's probably a huge green or red flag is how receptive are they yet to, you know, new information and ideas. And certainly I'm not an expert, but I think I have an interest in, you know, reading contemporary information. I'll, you know, jump on blogs and certainly from the Home Method and listening to podcasts. And so sometimes I think I had valuable input to share. And so when I shared a look, here's how you do slab edge insulation with termite protection, here's an article from Renew about that, they'd be like, oh, this is actually really useful. Like it's a It was a huge green flag for me when I would send something to Sam and he'd say, "This is great. I've sent it to all the boys to have a read." So, this openness to learning. So, backing yourself and bringing your expertise, but both Sam and Lockie, had this openness to receiving new ideas, and that made it such a fun, collaborative environment to be in.
Yeah, I love that. And that's definitely a testament to their abilities and professionalism as operators, that they are open like that. Because, yeah, unfortunately, those who don't have a great experience found that they're kind of talked down to, or that they're, and I know I find that with, a lot of the conversations and comments in Home Method can be, how can I have a respectful conversation with my professionals because I've done this learning and I've done this research on this particular resource. I know Michael was asking about that in the group just the other day. I've come up with what I want to do for the roof structure, and how do I, and this desire to make sure that you are being respectful of their kind of expertise. But it's so much obviously when the openness is there, and you can ask those questions, and even if it's not the way that it's going to support your project being the best, there's that the conversation can actually occur, and you can feel comfortable as a client that you can bring those things to the table is such so critical in you feeling like you have agency in your project, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, but part of my work as a coach is all about asking questions. And one of the things that I really learned through this process and completely aligns with my work is that the kind of the quality of the answer that you get is really dependent on the question you ask. And sometimes in, forums, etc., I see a lot of questions that homeowners are asking around, why does it cost this much? Why are we doing it this way? Why? And why is sometimes an important question to ask. It's important that you understand, but why can often, provoke a defensive reaction from someone? And sometimes it doesn't actually get you closer. The information actually doesn't get you closer to where you want to be. So rather than asking the questions of my team, like, why does it cost this much? Why are we doing it this way? It totally changed the conversation to say, like, how might we reduce this cost by 50,000? How might we do this? Can you help me to understand the pros and cons of this approach? And so asking questions that both kind of like invited a more expansive conversation around options was really good. And it also moved us in the direction. Sometimes knowing why it costs a certain amount doesn't actually help you in any way. What you actually want is a result that costs this much, or you want to know what you need to do to bring it under budget. So, yeah, shifting those questions can often shift the whole conversation.
Yeah, that's a great learning and a great lesson to share with others, Claire. Thank you so much for that. We often talk about the quality of the questions and knowing the right questions to ask at the right time, don't we? And yeah, there's so much that just drives a very different outcome in your relationships and your projects. So, can I talk to you a little bit about cost? Because obviously, it's very common that you start out with a budget in mind and you travel down the road, and then what you build the project for is not what you started out with in mind. How did obviously the incorporation of Sam, the builder, in the design phase would have been critical for you navigating that. You're making decisions that are based on your values and priorities and intentions to create a sustainable home. How did you kind of navigate that budget approach in, making potential compromises, or, deciding that you were going to stretch yourself to have a better outcome in a particular place? What was that kind of money mindset, budget conversation that was happening as you navigated your project overall?
To be honest, like, there's a lot of deep breaths, a lot of angst, a lot of self-doubt in there. It's not easy. So, a lot of it was just taking a kind of a leap of faith a little bit in the end. But some of the things that I would that we did, certainly the cost of construction has escalated a lot over the last 3 years. And so when I started the project, I had a certain number in mind, which is not where we ended up. But quickly, it was clear that the initial budget wasn't going to meet with my desire for the house. So it was taking off all the non-essentials and really focusing on what was most important. And that's where the design brief was so important, because I had articulated the values, and some of those values were around connection with outdoors. So I knew that my windows were really important, and the design to accommodate that connection with outdoors was super important. The other thing was around gathering and having a space that the people could gather. And then there was the third value, which is around kind of functional simplicity, just having just enough house and having the right storage. And so it really helped me to let things go. And when it comes to sustainable building, I think that one of the, I don't know, the advantages that that so much of the expenditure is tied up in the like the bones of the house. I knew that I would never get an opportunity to upgrade my wrap again. I would never get an opportunity. Well, I could upgrade the insulation, but not without a lot of hassle. You know, getting the flooring right and the windows, they really felt like the most important things to invest in financially. And then I thought, I can put new taps in the bathroom. That's not actually that important to me, and it doesn't have an impact on those values that I hold most important. So yeah, I think that I feel very, very privileged to be able to build a house, and privileged for the financial position that I was in, and the support of some family that enabled me to do this. But yeah, sometimes it's just, you know, balancing the needs, but coming back to those values was really, really key.
Yeah. And I, you know, when you sent me through your brief and your observation that you wrote that sort of 3 years ago, and the house that you're living in is a reflection of that. You know, we talk a lot about how important it is to spend that time on your brief, so you do have that foundation to come and, you know, check and balance those decisions against as you're navigating forward, so that you can have clarity about what is really going to be meaningful for you. So, and also having it to communicate with your team so they understand and they can keep you in check and balance. Did you find that, you know, that your team were kind of educating you about, look, hey, you could do that, but you could also do this, and this is going to probably deliver on X, Y, and Z more effectively? Like, is that kind of the conversations you were having with them, or how did you see sort of that play out in their ability to support you in making, you know, those budget conscious decisions?
Yeah, certainly that advice was really helpful. And I think that having that design brief early on and starting the relationship early, it was almost like they could kind of internalize my values, and so that they were providing advice that was aligned, and I knew that we were moving in the right direction. But really simple things like my house has a combination of recycled brick and lightweight cladding as well. And so a conversation with Sam about, well, which walls do we clad and which walls do we put brick on? And you know, he was able to provide us some really practical advice about the cost of bricking around a window is much more expensive than it is to use lightweight cladding. So we could prioritize which walls we would do in that way. And certainly Sam, I think, just, you know, through experience, had kind of creative solutions to be able to solve some problems.
Yeah, I love that. I saw you share just in the Facebook group this morning that you've got your first electricity bill and you're over $200 in credit from because of the solar power that you have on your home. So those decisions that you were making, you talked about obviously, you know, making decisions that were about the structure itself and the things that were difficult or costly to change down the track. How also did you kind of balance the decisions of spending money where that initial outlay was going to obviously take a chunk of your budget, but was going to have this payback period in terms of obviously lowering your heating and cooling costs or improving the thermal performance of the home? Like, how did you sort of juggle those demands in your head when you're sort of looking at something nice that you wanted to have, you know, and those kinds of things? Because a lot of people are obviously borrowing from Peter to pay Paul and not necessarily making the same kind of decisions. How did you find that you navigated that?
To be honest, the solar wasn't a nice to have for me. It was so built into just my expectations for the home. So it was something I was always going to do. And so it just kind of formed part of the overall budget there. And I guess I feel that building a home, like I said, is a enormous privilege to be able to do that. And with that privilege comes a responsibility. Homes take up a huge, well, building a home takes up a huge amount of resources. It takes, in terms of the physical resources that it consumes, but the mental and the emotional resources, the labor, the financial resources that go into building a home. I really wanted the house to kind of be a demonstration of like how you can and how you should build homes with intention. So things like the solar were almost kind of no-brainers for me. And then it's been, you know, deferring other things that aren't so significant. So I took out almost all of my custom joinery. I thought that can come later. That's not so significant for me. So I guess everyone's going to be a little bit different. And I really like that the podcast and the first iteration was kind of got called Get It Right, not like Get It Perfect. So that what is right for each person is going to be different. But having a strong idea about what is right for you is so important, because you are going to be knocked around by so many influences in terms of you know friends, family, what's in the magazine, what other people are doing, your builder and your designer. So having that really clear idea of like what does right mean to me, kind of like can be your North Star through the process.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So it's just so true. Like, it's just so lovely hearing that it's worked that way for you, because it's what I've seen time and time again works. And so it's why I'm so passionate about teaching people to do it, because I know that it does help. And when you're kind of enduring something that can go for, you know, 3 years, to have that platform to come back to, that you have got really honest with yourself about what you really want, is just so important. So I love that. Yeah, I love that that's been your experience of it. So now you, in terms of moving through the design phase and into construction, did you find that you kind of landed on the design quickly, or was there lots of iterations? How did you sort of, you know, weigh up those design choices as you were navigating through that process of working with your team?
So we didn't land on the design straight away. We had probably a few back and forth. But like I said earlier, every false start you learn something from. And so I think a design that doesn't meet your expectations sometimes is really useful, because the act of clarifying why it doesn't work helps you get closer to what's most important. And I actually remember being a little bit frustrated and being a little bit worried about like what happens if I'm almost at the end of the design budget and I haven't got a design that I like. And I remember posting that in the Facebook group at the time. What I ended up doing is just sitting down for 2 hours with Lockie, and we just actually got out the yellow trace paper and moved things around. And again, I think testament to Lockie's willingness to work collaboratively with me, but that was drawing on all the previous iterations of the design to say what works. And again, coming back to the values, this idea about wanting the house to pull me outside was such a central thread in the design. And going to Jenny Edwards' house, one of the things I loved about her house is that all her bedrooms had two windows on two walls, and I thought, I want that. That's so important. And obviously that actually has a massive impact on the design that you can generate, because it means that you need to have two external walls for every single bedroom. But being really clear on note, like, that is so important to me, then you can design around that. So it's almost like the constraints are actually useful in helping you frame a design. So yeah, that's how we navigated that.
It's funny, isn't it? I think a lot of people see the constraints as a frustration or an annoyance. And if it was only just for that they could have the perfect design. But, you know, time and time again, research shows that constraint drives better creativity and can actually be a really great way to, you know, really push the boundaries of what's possible. So, and, you know, even something as clear as I want windows on two walls of bedrooms in so that I can promote that cross ventilation and that room feels different, does obviously, you know, you're not saying to the designer, I need the bedrooms to be laid out like this, but you're giving them a constraint that says this is the outcome that we're seeking to achieve. So therefore, you know, any design that gets presented to you that doesn't have that outcome, you know, it's not in alignment with what you initially envisaged. So it works incredibly well. And I think it's a really powerful way of explaining to people, don't try and draw it. Don't try and, you know, decide on it for yourself. Explain how you want the outcome to be and let the designer juggle that in their kind of skill set. Is that how you sort of found it worked for you in terms of those kinds of things?
100%. And this is another area where I see a lot of alignment with my coaching work, is that often people can think in very kind of binary ways, like either I can have this house or this one, either, you know, but actually there are infinite possible options, really. But what you want to get clear on is the outcome that you want, how you want to feel in this home, what you want the home to do for you, like so that was much more. And I think that as a creative professional, I imagine for a designer or architect, that's actually letting them do the thing that they're skilled at, and letting them exercise some creativity. Yeah. And so I think that it just opens up so many more possibilities, and possibilities that you as a homeowner haven't thought of but might end up being really delighted by.
Yeah, I love it. Now, can we talk through some of the decisions that you made to achieve that sustainability? You, of course, were pursuing a certain level of airtightness. You wanted, or you at least wanted to know what the airtightness of the home was going to be. And you were thinking about a lot of the things that we've been discussing in terms of condensation management and mitigation of risks around that. You know, a lot of sort of ideas that often can feel like they're passive house principles, but you were wanting to deliver them in that conventional construction approach. What did you do in terms of navigating that with your team and getting a commitment from them to kind of deliver that way, and how then you sort of set up your construction process for that to be possible? Sort of, can you remember through how that sort of all worked for you?
Sure. Again, this kind of feels like something that was almost like a no-brainer. So it was something that I went into the conversation to say, like, we are doing it this way. It wasn't like, oh, maybe we should, or maybe we could. So being really clear that that kind of structure of the home in terms of the wrap and the insulation and the cladding materials was really, really important. And going in with this expectation that I wanted to achieve a certain level of airtightness. And I think originally I was saying, you know, 3 to 6-ish would be good. And so Sam had done some projects using Proclima wraps and prioritizing that airtightness. And so that gave me some confidence. But what also gave me confidence was how he could talk about what they'd learned and what they'd gotten wrong in previous projects and how they'd iterated and you know, improved their methodology. So I could tell that he was not only had some experience, but was really receptive to learning along the way. Yeah, and that's what we did. So we wrapped the house in Proclima wrap and the roof as well, and really, really careful taping we did. I had originally planned to include provision for decentralized ventilation, depending on where the airtightness result ended up. And so we were going to put the framing in the wall so it was easier to retrofit that decentralized ventilation. But we did the first blower door test when the house was wrapped. And we achieved an airtightness result below 1, which just absolutely blew us all away that we had done that with just an external wrap and really careful insulation, careful installation of that wrap. So I think that really highlighted for me that you can achieve very airtight homes with good design, good product, and careful installation. It is really, really achievable. And so that we quickly pivoted then to say, right, we're going to need some centralized ventilation. And luckily, the design and the shape of the roof had sufficient space for putting a centralized ventilation unit in the roof. And then we could duct it to the room. So that was the process there. And then we ended up getting around, I think, 1.2 for our final airtightness result when we did it at the end. So that's a really, really excellent result. And that airtightness, I guess, is in part, and the ventilation that I've put in, it's in part about absolutely kind of thermal efficiency for the house, but also about creating a really healthy, comfortable home as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think that, how did that sort of process feel when you realized that the kind of the option that you'd built in wasn't going to be, like, obviously changing tack in a ventilation system midway in a project, a lot of people would find incredibly stressful. How did you sort of navigate that in terms of the way that you were working with your team at the time?
I guess we were delighted to get that kind of result, but you're right. Like it meant a bit of a pivot. Again, I guess it was thinking about what's the priority here and what's going to be harder to upgrade later. So it was a really quick decision that air conditioning was going off the list and the ventilation was going on. So there was, you know, a budget switch out there and prioritizing that ventilation system. But I think in hindsight, what I've learned is that if you've got a good design, you're using good product, and you've got a careful team, it's likely that you're probably going to get a pretty airtight result, and a result that's going to necessitate some ventilation. So in hindsight, I think I would have factored in the centralized from the outset, because I don't know what the option is otherwise. I don't know if we got 0.66 in our initial result. I'm not sure, like what I said, or go and untape some of the holes that you've taped, or go and put some holes in the wall. Yeah, that's make the house more leaky. And so, and I think it's quite hard for a builder to kind of know, like, how good is good enough. If they're taping all of the joins and doing it all properly, they're probably going to get a pretty good result. So I think it's almost hard to aim for an air tightness result of 5 or something like that, because it's in between. So I would definitely, if you are giving intentional consideration to the air tightness of your home, I would definitely advise that that goes hand in hand with mechanical ventilation.
Yeah, and that's very good advice, because it is that thing. The more that I see builders learn about this and then also use good quality products that have mechanisms in place and training in place to be able to install well and do what they promise they do, the more likely you are to get a really good outcome for air tightness. And then if you haven't factored in that in hand with that goes that, recovery ventilation system, then you can obviously run into some problems needing retrofit down the track. And the last thing you want is an incredibly airtight home that isn't giving you the opportunity for recovery ventilation, because yeah, then you've got problems obviously with the indoor air, and how you keep that healthy and clean. And that's it for part one of my conversation with Claire. There were some really great takeaways in there for your own new build or renovation, including this idea of what you'll make as a non-negotiable for yourself. I think that many homeowners feel that only if they had more money, they could have the perfect home. But to be frank with you, even those with big budgets can build terrible homes, and more money does not necessarily equal a better house. What does create a great home is clarity around what a great home actually means for you, and getting intentional about the team that you'll choose, the steps that you'll take, and how you'll keep yourself on track through the well-meaning advice but often confusing suggestions that will happen along the way that can distract you from your goals and your priorities. It was fantastic to hear how Claire did this in her project and how she got herself informed and educated to navigate her project so well. In the next episode, you're going to hear more about Claire's project, especially the construction process, and how she got selective about where she chose to hang out online and the kinds of information that she generally digested during her project. She also talks about her mindset and how she supported herself to be resilient and back her decisions. And she dives into some of the detail about the choices that have really made a big difference to her lifestyle and convenience in her home, and what she would do differently if she had her time over. Now, remember, I've got a full transcript of this episode, plus links to the helpful resources that you need and photographs of Claire's project. You can find all of that by heading to www.undercoverarchitect.com/313. That's the numbers 313. And if you'd like to join homeowners like Claire, getting the support and guidance they need to get it right in their home design and be confident as they navigate their project whilst enjoying the experience and staying true to your goals and your vision, then Home Method is definitely where you need to be. Become part of a vibrant online community that shares your aspirations. Benefit from mine and other professionals' expertise through step-by-step guidance, actionable insights, and personal support. With a structured step-by-step approach, Home Method empowers you to expertly navigate your project. Through easy-to-follow phases, comprehensive videos, templates, and checklists, you'll gain the skills and the confidence to bring your future home to life, whoever you're working with, and whatever your dreams, your location, or your budget. You can find Home Method by heading to www.homemethod.com.au, or on the Undercover Architect website, you'll find Home Method in the menu there. As always, thank you for tuning in and for letting me be your secret ally. Until next time, bye. Just a reminder, all content on this podcast is provided by Undercover Architect for reference purposes and as general guidance. It does not take into account specific circumstances and should not be relied on in that way. You should seek independent verification or advice before relying on this content in any circumstances, including but not limited to circumstances where loss and damage may result. The views and opinions of any guests on the podcast are solely their own and may not reflect the views of Undercover Architect. Undercover Architect endeavours to publish content that is accurate at the time it is published, but does not accept responsibility for content that may or has become inaccurate over time.